Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, we are talking about a review of concurrent training, how to get as strong and enduring as possible at the same time. So this would be different from a block periodized approach where you would do just resistance training for a time and then do just endurance training. This is, you're trying to combine resistance training and endurance training and adapt to both. So we know that the more endurance training you do, the more that your adaptations to resistance training are attenuated or reduced. And so we're going to talk about volume, intensity, frequency, mode, order, and then best practices for how to do this. So this is geared towards CrossFitters mainly, but also hybrid and tactical athletes as well. So first, some definitions. So strength. By strength, I mean adaptations to resistance training. This can include hypertrophy, maximal strength, and power. By endurance, I mean adaptations to aerobic training, whether it's high intensity or low intensity aerobic training. These can include aerobic endurance and capacity, anaerobic capacity if we're talking about high intensity training. And so concurrent training, like I said before, just means that you're pursuing strength and endurance at the same time. So I'm using those terms pretty broadly here. High intensity means training zone 3, which just means above the anaerobic threshold or lactate threshold 2. Low intensity is training zone 1 or 2. These are training zones, which are different from heart rate zones. And below lactate threshold 2 or below the anaerobic threshold is what we mean by low intensity. Okay, so those are some definitions before we get into it. And first, to start with volume. So volume, when it comes to concurrent training, the less you do, the less you attenuate adaptations to strength training. So what does that mean? It just means that the higher your energy expenditure goes, there may be some other molecular mechanisms that occur, but we do know that the more energy you expend, whether you do that with high intensity aerobic training or low intensity aerobic training, the more you do, the more you can expect your strength gains to level off and possibly decrease if you are doing enough aerobic training. So low intensity, what are the volume guidelines for low intensity if you're trying to make appreciable gains in your strength? No more than 45 minutes per session. And the reason for that is low glycogen and energy deficit become more likely the longer the session lasts. And those things can activate AMPK and SIRT1, which basically are molecular interactions that inhibit the mTOR pathway and could be the molecular basis for attenuating strength gains. So no more than 45 minutes if you're doing low intensity. If you're doing high intensity, it's much, much less than that. Much, much less. It's 4 to 10 minutes. One review said 4 to 10 minutes. Another review said less than 20 minutes. I would do 4 to 10 minutes to be safe. If you start to do more than that, then not only could you be activating more AMPK and SIRT1, thus inhibiting mTOR, but your energy expenditure is going to be higher. So definitely keep high intensity training to 4 to 10 minutes per session. Next is frequency. So do your highest priority more frequently. This assumes that you have priorities. So if you're going into a concurrent training program, I strongly recommend that you have a top priority and a secondary priority. At the very least, if you're just saying, I'm trying to get good at both all at the same time, which is kind of, you know, the CrossFit hybrid mantra, I would say, well, you probably would do better with a little bit more prioritization. You definitely see more appreciable gains in whatever you prioritize. And when it comes to frequency, you're just going to do your highest priority more frequently. So whether that's strength or endurance, you would do 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 top priority to secondary priority. So if your priority is strength, then you would do 2 strength sessions or 3 strength sessions, even better, for every 1 endurance session that you did. And it would be the opposite if your priority was endurance. The max frequency for low intensity training, if you are trying to make appreciable gains in your strength is 3 to 4 days per week. I would do 3 to be safe. 3 was shown in a study at 70% intensity, 3 days a week at 50 minutes per session, did not attenuate strength at all. And so I would stick with 3 days to be safe. If you're doing 4, that is possible that that could work for you. If you start to get more than that, then again, it's just your energy expenditure is higher. So it is more difficult to stay in an energy surplus, which is the optimal physiological environment for strength gains. High intensity frequency, we don't know the exact max dosage for it yet. We just know that when energy expenditure goes up, it hurts your strength gains more. So keep it 4 to 10 minutes, and you could do it as often as every day. You could do it 6 days a week, as long as you're keeping it really, really short. You know, the shorter you're doing it, if you're doing 6 5-minute sessions, that's the same as doing 3 10-minute sessions. So I would quantify it in terms of the total minutes that you're doing per week. And yeah, it's probably something like 20 to 60 minutes per week. That's somewhere around the max dosage. We don't really know. But if you're keeping it really, really short, like 4 to 10 minutes, then you could play with the frequency anywhere from 3 to 6 times per week. And that somewhere in there, anything beyond that, I would say that's probably going to attenuate your strength gains based on literature. But if you're staying between 3 to 6 days per week, then you're probably okay. Okay, next, intensity. So intensity, again, it's probably similar as long as your energy expenditure is equated. So it comes back to the volume. The more you do, the less strong you're going to get. So there may be molecular mechanisms with higher intensity. Like I said, activation of AMPK and SIRT1 that inhibits the mTOR pathway. There was one study where they literally had them do 10 sets of 6 seconds all out cycling. And that completely shut down mTOR after when they did that before doing resistance training. So there may be something going on there. We don't really know, but I prefer low intensity personally, and I'll get to that in my best practices, my interpretation at the end, but I'm trying to start with just what the literature says. And intensity is probably similar as long as energy expenditure is equated. Next, we have mode. So this is the modality that you're using, and running attenuates strength more than cycling. A lot of reasons for that related to body mass and, you know, moving your body through space. But running does attenuate more than cycling. I suspect too that energy expenditure with running is just generally higher. It's just more work, and cycling is more concentric based. It's easier to make sustainable. And so choose cycling over running when it comes to your modality if you're trying to get stronger. Order. Okay, this is one of the most important, probably, and this comes down to the priority training principle. So if you're doing concurrent training, I mean you're doing both strength and endurance training in the same day, then do your highest priority first, whether it's strength or endurance. Train fed and train fresh. So doing your highest priority first, that means you're going to be the freshest, and training fed just means you're going to be in a good physiological environment to perform in the training session and then adapt afterwards. Separate the sessions by 3 to 6 hours or do them on their own day. Most people who are doing concurrent training are doing some form of aerobic training and some form of strength training in the same day. So separate it by at least 3 to 6 hours. That's generally enough for whatever you had physiologically going on in the first session to basically come back to homeostasis before you do the next session. Okay, and then we have finally experience. So the concurrent training effect gets stronger and stronger the more advanced you get. So novice trainees, they can take them and they can basically have them do a ton of training, and they'll adapt really well to both strength and endurance training up to a certain dosage of endurance training, like I said before. But that dosage is lower the more advanced you get. So The more advanced you get, the more accurate you need to get with your dosages. That's the takeaway there. Okay, so what is my interpretation of all of this literature? Train your highest priorities first in the day. Again, that assumes that you have priorities and you basically, you know what you want and you're okay with making really slight gains or maintaining your secondary priorities while you work on your top priority. Train those first in the day. Do more of what you want to improve the most. And I mean, these are really straightforward guidelines, but they're worth mentioning because, yeah, there's a lot of confusion out there with regards to, you know, in the CrossFit community where I come from, where it's basically there's no upper limit to the amount that you can adapt to, and that leads to overtraining, chronic energy deficit, and burnout. So do more of what you want to improve the most. Test and retest. If you're not progressing at the rate that you want to, then do less other stuff. So this is one reason that there's so scarce research on CrossFit methodology, is because it's not controlled very well. And so it's really difficult to know whether the training program is even working. So one thing that I recommend CrossFitters do a lot more of is testing and retesting, so that you can actually know whether your training split, whether your dosages of each type of training are actually producing the result that you want. So test and retest. And if you're not gaining as fast as you want to, for an advanced athlete, something like 5 to 10% year over year, the more advanced you get, the lower that number gets. If you're not progressing at that rate, then do less other stuff. Strength first. Okay, so now we're talking about block periodization and basically what you should prioritize if you're doing concurrent training. So the concurrent training effect only works one way. Endurance training attenuates strength gains, but strength training doesn't attenuate endurance gains in most cases. So what that means is that once you're strong enough, you can retain your strength pretty well and increase the dosage of your endurance training or your aerobic training and stay pretty strong and get a lot faster. So, but if you do it the other way, where you're trying to get really, really fast or really, really enduring and prioritizing that before you are strong enough, then you are making it really, really hard to get stronger. So the concurrent training effect only works one way, and because of that, you want to prioritize strength first. Next takeaway. If using high intensity, keep it very, very short, less than 10 minutes to be safe. Again, this is if you're really trying to get stronger and you want to maintain some aerobic ability, some endurance capacity while you're getting stronger, keep your high intensity sessions very, very short. Less than 10 minutes is my guideline. Do it on a bike. And only do high intensity if you're really strapped for time. There are a lot of reasons that I prefer low intensity over high intensity that are probably beyond the scope of this episode. That molecular mechanism is a new one that is another possible reason to prefer low intensity over high intensity, the inhibition of mTOR. But there are a lot of other reasons that aren't molecular that make me prefer low intensity. It's a lot less stressful to do, and it's a lot more sustainable in the long term, over the course of a career. There's something going on physiologically or psychologically with high intensity training that makes it unsustainable and makes it more likely to cause burnout, essentially. And so there's a lot of speculation as to what the mechanism is that causes that, but I've just seen it a lot personally and clinically. So I prefer low intensity over high intensity. If you're using low intensity, keep the intensity actually low. I recommend staying below lactate threshold 1, which is different from lactate threshold 2. So lactate threshold 1 is where the first point or the first intensity at which you notice a measurable increase in blood lactate. So above LT1, below LT2, blood lactate will still be in a steady state, but it is just more stressful to do. That between LT1 and LT2, that's training zone 2, and that corresponds with about heart rate zone 3. And below lactate threshold 1 is training zone 1, and that correlates really well with heart rate zones 1 and 2. So I really recommend staying in low intensity. I would keep it 3 days a week to be safe, no more than 50 minutes per session. If you go over that, then you're more likely to get into a glycogen depleted state and just an energy deficit state. And those things seem to inhibit mTOR. And you're just more tired. And for a lot of reasons, being in an energy deficit is not the optimal environment for strength gains. So keep it 50 minutes per session or less. And do it on a bike or a Stairmaster. Just don't do it running, because running seems to attenuate strength gains more than biking. The more advanced you get, the more you need to get accurate with your dosages. I said this before, but the more advanced you get, the concurrent training effect gets stronger. And so you need to get more accurate with your dosages. If you're a beginner or you're intermediate listening to this, you can probably just train hard in all the things that you want to do. And even if you're in an energy deficit, you might have so much motor learning happening that you're still adapting. So, and you're performing better in both your strength and your endurance. You could be just, you know, getting better running economy as an example, or getting better at the skill of squatting as an example. But the more advanced you get, the less that applies. So the more you need to get accurate with your dosages, because the physiological limitations are going to be the things that are actually limiting you rather than motor learning adaptations. Finally, eat. Eat, eat, eat. If you are doing concurrent training, your carbohydrate needs are above the minimum 3 to 4 grams per kilogram. If you're just doing resistance training, it's probably more like 4 to 6 grams per kilogram of body weight minimum. And the higher your doses of conditioning, the more carbohydrate that you need to replenish muscle glycogen and stay in an energy surplus. So if you're doing higher doses of conditioning, it's probably more like 6 to 8 grams per kilogram of body weight. Protein needs likely increase as well. So if you're just doing resistance training, it's probably 1.8 grams per kilogram of body weight in protein. And if you're doing concurrent training, you might just need a little bit more so that you have sufficient amino acids for muscle protein synthesis. So I would increase it slightly above 1.8 grams per kilogram, probably 2, maybe 2.2 grams per kilogram if you are doing concurrent training for protein. Okay, guys, that's it for today. If you're listening to the podcast, please rate it. If you're listening, if you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. And I do want to put a little thing in here. I'm taking applications right now for my one-on-one coaching. So for those of you who don't know, and for those of you who do, I guess, I work with individuals, mostly CrossFit athletes, some hybrid, some tactical athletes, basically anyone who's multidisciplinary, anybody who does concurrent training. And yeah, I work with them one-on-one. So I have a pretty small book of clients, and I give each client lots of attention. More attention certainly than if you're on a templated program. More attention certainly than if you're piecing it together yourself. And more attention than most coaches who just have a large book of 100 clients or something like that. So I like to be selective with who I work with. And if you go to the link in my bio on Instagram at Paul B. Weber, then you'll see the link to the application. If you fill out the application, then I will get back to you within 72 hours if I think we might be a good fit working together. And working with me, guys, is basically just your individualized, periodized training. So when you have multiple training priorities like this, you're doing concurrent training, it's really easy to, one, it's a lot of training. So if you're training 8 to 15 hours a week, that's a lot to put together yourself. Even if you listen to these podcasts and other podcasts and YouTube videos, etc. And so it makes it a lot easier to just delegate that to somebody and at least have somebody that you're collaborating with on putting your training together. And finally, the last thing I'll say about it is really what coaching is it's the final step in your athletic journey. So after you hire a coach, there's nothing that comes after it. You know, most people go from group classes to training on their own and piecing it together from multiple free resources like this podcast, to maybe doing something templated for, you know, $40 to $80 a month. And then they're just like, I'm still not progressing as fast as I think I could. And that just really bugs me. Like, I really want to see how far I can go in this thing, because if I don't have that curiosity satisfied, it's not going to be good. I just need to have that curiosity satisfied. And in order to have that, I need to go all in. I need to leave no stone unturned. And that means I need an individualized, periodized training program that is, you know, considers me, where I'm starting from, my priorities, my time commitment to training, and when I'm competing. So that's the main thing that I do for my clients. And then I also get into their nutrition and their lifestyle and help them in those areas as well. I have lots of other podcasts on those things. So that's what it's, that's, you know, basic overview of what it's like to work with me. At the end of it, my clients, they invest typically 1 to 5 years into that process. And at the end of it, they just know, they're just like, yeah, there's nothing else I could have done. Like, and so whether they get the result or not, they have that piece that, and they can move on, because they know that, yeah, I did the top tier thing and there's nothing else that I could have done because I left no stone unturned. So, yeah, guys, just a little plug for coaching, and go ahead. And if you're interested in that, you want to learn more, you can send me an email, paul@paulbweber.com, or you can go to the link in my Instagram bio and apply for coaching. And with that, guys, I will see you in the next episode. Thanks for listening.